experimentation and engagement in Green and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustainable.
Wake up! Wake up, wake up, wake up! Up you wake, up you wake, up you wake, up you wake! This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy, your voice of choice. The world's only 12-hour strong man on the air. Here on We Love Radio, 108 FM. The last on your dial, but first in your heart. And that's the truth, Root. Here I am. Am I here? You know it, you know. This is Mr. Senior Love Daddy doing the nasty to your ears to the nasty. Eyes only play the platters that matter, the matters they platter. And that's the Taruk Root.
From the heart of Bed-Stuy, you're listening to We Love Radio.
Doing the yin and the yang, the hip and the hop, the stupid fresh thing, the flippity flop. Oh! I have today's forecast for you. Hot! The color for today is black. That's right, black, so you can absorb some of these rays and save that heat for winter. So you want to get on out there, wear that black, and be involved. Also, today's temperature is going to rise up over 100 degrees, so that's a Jerry Curl alert. That's right, Jerry Curl alert. If you have a Jerry Curl, stay in the house, or you'll end up with a permanent plastic helmet on your head forever.
Hi, I'm Stan Raven. I used to be from somewhere else, but I'm not there anymore. And you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to WGXC.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The Hudson Valley Picture Show traveling series brings cinema to locations around the region. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Neil Verma of Chicago, Illinois. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Green and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Happy Native American Heritage Month. This Friday is National American Heritage Day. I'd like to wish everyone listening a good evening and welcome to Race Talks. I am your host, Kimberly Y. Irwin, broadcasting on WGXC 90.7 FM, awayfarm.org Enterprise. Here on WGXC 90.7 FM, a listener-supported, solar-powered, hands-on community media organization covering Troy to Poughkeepsie, Middleburg to Great Barrington. We gather every third Tuesday of the month from around 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. to engage in the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And you may be wondering, why talk about race? The answer is simple. To combat racism, education is key and discussion is a must. But beyond talking, we must all play an active role in dismantling racial injustice in America and around the world. After all, there's only one race, the human one, and a wealth of ethnicities. We have a fantastic show lined up, but I have to admit, the bugs are always coming up, and we have just actually gotten our internet uploaded. So we're going to try to keep this show as tight to what I'm sharing with you right now, because we are starting this show without one of my former team members. And so although we wrote this wonderful opening, due to the internet, we may not be able to do all that I've stated that we have to do. But I'm going to soldier on, because that's what we ladies do. So like I said, we have a fantastic show lined up. We will start with a look at November's cultural celebrations. And because no topic is taboo, I will make a statement about the current political dynamics shaping our world today. And rounding out the opening is a historical shout out. That will be an excellent introduction to the highlight of our show, our guest talkers that will be joining us at our roundtable at the end of the show too. So they're going to stay around. So who are our guest talkers this November? I see we have access. They are on. So I can say this stuff. Our guest talkers this November are Dr. Kimberly Adam Tufts and Emily Bush. They will share their unique paths to helping women make an impact by overcoming racial and gender disparities in the workforce and entrepreneurship. Dr. Tufts is an expert in academia and focuses on the challenges women face in securing tenure, achieving promotion, and focuses on the challenges women face in securing, I just said that, in establishing pay equity, because money is the issue, right? We all want to earn similarly for the same work we do to men and to other women. And Ms. Bush will share insights from her work that takes her throughout Africa and the United States to help women like me, in fact, that's how we met, to grow and scale their own businesses. So I'm going to do what I'm going to ask you to do right now. Get comfy, get your cup of cocoa, because it's cold outside. I think it was snowing even before I came into the studio. Your cup of Joe, or, you know, some juice, whatever you would like. Get ready for a journey this hour of enlightenment and empowerment on Race Talks. So we're going to get started with cultural celebrations. Now, last month in October, I mentioned that I was going to talk about the Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, versus Halloween, and we didn't get to it. So I'm just going to make a brief mention that the Dia de los Muertos, which is in November 1st and 2nd, in fact, is very similar to, which is celebrated by Mexicans in North America, which also includes America. So we have them celebrate it right here in our own backyard too. However, Halloween is supposed to be in October, the last month, the last day of October, which is also considered All Hallows Eve. Now, both of these holidays comes out of religious traditional training with Puritans coming from the Celtic regions of Europe, bringing this holiday to these shores. So many people don't celebrate this holiday or other holidays, but I bring it forth because it is a cultural recognition. And I hope that satisfies my team members who said that I did not mention this before. But we also have some other holidays that we celebrate in November, or some do. If you're a Hindu, you may have been celebrating the Festival of Lights, which is Diwali. That's illuminating the cultural richness of their Indian culture. And the fact that we celebrate, or some Americans may celebrate that, is because we have a rich ethnic group of Hindu followers in the United States. And in Hudson, and I may have said this before to you listeners, you're like, she's saying that again. But on the block that I grew up on, Columbia Street, there's actually a mosque being built. It's almost finished, I believe. And they have a rich heritage and a large group of people who are coming from different countries around India, and Sri Lanka, which is a small island that's on the southern tip of India, and Bengali. We have a huge Bangladesh population here. And so Diwali was very interesting because I celebrated it when I was the director of assistant director of Office of International Programs in Western Kentucky University, when we had a large group of Indian students coming to our graduate facilities. However, I never expected it to be in the ShopRite supermarket newspaper where they actually are marketing Diwali produce. So that just shows how the wealth of our culture in and around this area that we call home in New York, upstate New York. So the last holiday I'm going to talk about is Thanksgiving Day, because guys, it's Thursday, and whether you celebrate it as a holiday or not, it's always a great time to not go to work, right? And it's a fabulous time to make up any excuse to have a great meal with lovely people. And I'm going to be in Texas visiting my family. So I'm hoping that you all are having a great time, whether, again, you are a celebrator of a holiday or you're just looking for an excuse to stay home and pop on. I think they watch football a lot here. But what is Thanksgiving Day? We know that comes from the Puritans when they entered, when they stepped foot on the shores of what they considered America back then. And it's different from and then we have Indigenous Peoples Day, which is celebrated in October because of the of Columbus Day, with the idea that Columbus was supposed to have discovered America and they didn't. So we want to recognize those people who actually were here in America, or the land that we consider America, and that's in October. But then we also have, like I mentioned at the top of the show, the celebration of the Native American Heritage Month, which is November, but there's actually a Native American Heritage Day, and that's Friday, the very day after Thanksgiving. And I don't think people really knew that. Actually, I didn't really know that. So maybe if you didn't really know that, you have Indigenous Peoples Day and you also have Native American Heritage Day. And so one is in recognition of Christopher Columbus, and that takes place in October. And then we have in November the recognition that we celebrate the Americans with Thanksgiving, but we should also celebrate the Native population that was here. So we offer that, we do that, and recognize them on that Friday, on the Friday afterwards. Okay, so the last thing I have to do before we get to the show that I know I'm waiting for, our guest talkers, is the word of wisdom. And I want to actually let you know that in the station here, we have our familiar guest host usually, but he's production here for me today because we were having some technical difficulties, and I've asked him to do all the sound just to make sure that I stay on task. So if you hear any musical instruments, know that it's just him telling me to go to the next segment to let you know that we are needing to move on. But someone asked me about Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and because this is Race Talks and we talk about race and ethnicity, and Israelis are Israeli and Palestinians, though the country of Israel is not anywhere near here, it's in the Middle East, we do recognize Israeli populations, and we also have Palestinian members of the Palestinian population also in America. And so I'm going to quote this that I thought was a great word of wisdom for this segment. To have a home is human. To fight for one's homeland is humanity's ill. And I'll just stop with that. Everyone should have a home. And unfortunately, many people have to fight to maintain it, because there's always others who are coming to claim it. And I say all that with the understanding that I just talked about Native Americans and how we recognize them because, guess what? People came and took over this land that they called theirs. And So we want to celebrate and uplift all human beings on the show. And so for all of those who are in harm's way and is unable to be with family for all reasons that are ill, I want to just take a moment of silence to say that I know my heart is with you. Okay, so that's the moment of silence. And I want to thank you all for also sharing that moment of silence. So we are going to move on to our feature discussion today. And, oh, I should say, before we dive into our feature discussion, let's take a moment to recognize a historical milestone, which is the Women's Bureau, which was established on June 5th, 1920, as a beacon of progress to mandate the needs of wage-earning women. It formulated the standards and policies to promote women's welfare, to improve our working conditions, and to increase efficiency and advance opportunities for profitable employment, not just to make some money, but to make money so that we can take care of our families. So this organization is a testament to the power of progress and inclusion. And with that note, of course, I will introduce our first guest. And the title, I should say, or the section is Securing a Seat at the Table. So one of our distinguished guests, Emily Bush, brings a wealth of experience and an unwavering commitment to gender equity. As the program coordinator of the USA Women's Entrepreneurship Cooperative, USAWEC, and an integral part of AWEC, which is the African Women's Entrepreneurship Cooperative, Emily will share insights into why it's essential for women not just to have a seat at the table, but to actively shape the discussions around it. Her journey in the field promises to offer a unique perspective on the intersection of race and gender, unveiling the powerful interplay that shapes our society today. And following her, like I said, would be Dr. Kimberly Adams Cat Tufts. I call her Dr. Cat because she's been very helpful in helping me to do what I need to do to be successful in my endeavors. So we're going to start, though, with Securing a Seat at the Table with Emily Bush. Emily, I see that you made it on Zoom. We got you in. I'm hoping that you are actually able to be heard. So we're going to make sure that's the case, right? All right. So, Emily, just take a moment here, if I can ask you to share a little bit more in depth about who you are and why it's a great thing that you came on today, Race Talks. One moment, Emily. I'm thinking we need to do a mic check because we are unable to hear you on air. And we are going to make sure this is working over here. Right. Okay, so we are, as we get our first guest talker on air, I'm going to go to the very next segment, which was going to be a segment right before we do a roundtable talk. And that segment is to talk about firsts. Oh, it looks like she might be able to be on. Can we try to have you say something?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we've got you. Okay, so now we don't have to go into the next segment. Wonderful. Emily, you're on. Share with the listeners. First, tell them where you're calling in from.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you so much for inviting me on the show, Kimberly. I am so excited to be here. I am tuning in from London, England. So it is just past midnight. So please forgive me if I get a little wandery in my thoughts. It's been a long day, but I couldn't be more excited to be here to talk about race and gender and entrepreneurship. As you said, I work predominantly with now African women entrepreneurs, but when we met, I was working with the US women entrepreneurs. I grew up in America, so obviously it's a space in which I have a lot of personal and anecdotal background about the, I guess, systematic oppression at play in sort of business that affects women and particularly women of color. And so I'm very excited to dive in about all of that today.
Awesome. And while you were sharing that, I was remembering when I met you. And I actually didn't know you had a British accent. How did that happen? So
it was lovely to meet you. But my family is English, so I sort of have an international approach, which is very, very helpful when I sort of expanded into studying African women and sort of getting a better multinational intersectional view of entrepreneurship.
Now, did that start and while you were, how did that start? Were you going to school for that, or was that something that you were just in London being around people that you thought, this is what I'd like to do with life?
It's a funny story, actually. I studied gender, sexuality, and women's studies at university. I went to the College of William and Mary, which is a school in Virginia, which I know Dr. Tufts is from Virginia, so she might know it. But it's an amazing school, and their gender sexuality program is very robust, very educational. And I was studying that, and I really liked sort of women and gender identities and how that sort of affects our connections and our relationships and how we interact with the world around us. And so as I was graduating from my school, I had a friend who was doing an internship at the UN, who had heard of this company called the Center for Global Enterprise, which is sort of the parent nonprofit that my institutes, work for. And so she sent me their contact information and thought that it would be something that I would be very interested in getting involved in. And so that's how I came in contact with the Center for Global Enterprise and how I ended up where I am today. So my background is predominantly in gender, and then I've sort of built my business knowledge through experience.
And when I was in London, I saw that there was many different people of many different ethnicities, just like the United States. But it seems like it's taken a while for the women in Great Britain to have as much power, I should say. I don't know, as much recognition. Although you guys had a woman leader, and we have yet to have one as a president. So when you look at the gender role models and the fact that there really hasn't been a person of color in the leadership role, how do you go about having that conversation or taking that information to expound on it and to have others think that they may excel in this environment?
It's a really incredible question. I think first and foremost, I would like to go on record and state that I do not view Margaret Thatcher, our first woman prime minister, as a role model. I do not support Margaret Thatcher. I find that many do not, although she was a woman. And so it's an interesting sort of dynamic in the sense that you can sort of break these barriers and feel incredibly proud. But I wouldn't want to say that I'm proud of Margaret Thatcher or how she got her position of power. So I think there's a lot to be said about not only just the success, but also how you get there. And, you know, I think Kamala Harris as a vice president is doing more for role model and leadership than Margaret Thatcher ever did for me. And so although I think that we need and deserve a, you know, woman president, woman of color president, I would want to make sure that they're supporting the right ideals and not necessarily having to play power dynamics and subscribe to power agendas that suppress others to get to that seat.
I like how you said that, because just because a person is in a position doesn't mean that they are, or they seem to represent a group physically. It doesn't mean that they necessarily represent that group in actuality, spiritually. And so I can totally understand you feeling that way about Margaret Thatcher. And then when you go to places in Africa, how do you instill that women take their values and their traditions and excel with their own cultural identities?
Well, I think that's another great question. Obviously, Africa being a continent and a, you know, amalgamation of 54 countries is really big. Like, talking about Africa as a homogeneous place is very complicated and often very misleading, right? There is sort of a pan, quote-unquote, African identity. But when you get into the nitty-gritty of politics and identity, I'm not sure that if you saw, you know, an Ethiopian woman in power in Ethiopia, that the Nigerian women would see that as a triumph. And so I think that often it's important to sort of remember that they are different and they have different power systems and different cultures and different struggles and dynamics at play. And so I think I'm not an African expert by any means, and I won't claim to be. And so I think that that would have to be something that someone with more experience and personal knowledge about those interworkings would have to tackle.
But I think what you just said makes sense, because it's what you've encountered. And I think that's the thing that I like with this show, is that I'm not necessarily looking to have an erudite on the show, a person who can look to their many different articles that they've written, or a lot of books that they've read to come up with their understanding, because most of us, we only have our faculties and our opportunities to engage with others. And not many of us, the reason why I want you on the show is not many of us had the opportunity to even travel to Africa. And you've gone to Africa, you've, as you mentioned, you've engaged with people of different nations. And just because one, I mean, that's the idea with race and ethnicity. It's not because of what we look like that we are what is considered a tribe or a group. It's more of our values and our way of thinking. And that just stems from who our immediate family and community is. And that can change when we change, when we move to another place and meet up with different people, and then merge our values and traditions, and then we kind of make a new one. And that's what people consider another ethnicity, actually. All of a sudden, you kind of change to another ethnic group. So last question I have before we go into our next segment is, what are some of the hints or tips you might have to offer a person who finds themselves looking to be more supported or accepted in their in entrepreneurship? Because, like, with an entrepreneur, you have to be able to market yourself and what you do, and, you know, be very proud, and yet also, you know, be a person who can be open to other people's values and wants.
I think that there are 1,001 tips and tricks out there, but I think, honing into the theme of today, I think that entrepreneurial journeys can be very lonely and can be very, very challenging. And so I think that finding communities and places where you can ask for help and ask for support and accountability is certainly something that can be very, very beneficial. That's what we do at AWEC, it's what we do at USAWEC, particularly for women. I think that men often have more traditional routes open to them about this is how you become a successful entrepreneur, and women don't often have that. And then I think that the second tip that that I run into a lot with working with women is that you are often better and more qualified than you think, right? You might be more of an expert and you can share and can support others even if you feel new in your journey. And so I think having that sort of self-confidence that you have already earned your seat at the table, and to sort of sit down and take advantage of that, is sort of the other tip and trick that I would share in this moment now.
Well, I would like to thank you, Ms. Bush, for having a statement or a couple statements that lead us right into our next guest. And I'm going to ask if you can hang around until we hear about her and another segment and join us for the roundtable. Are you interested?
And
of course. You're shaking your head. Yes, great. All right, so let me introduce my very next guest talker. And the way Emily ended her talk was with the idea that to help, we need to be helped to be accountable, to be held accountable. And that's exactly what this next guest talker has done for me. She's actually, in just one sitting, she was very thorough. She's actually helped me with my own, devils, I guess, with trying to accomplish a goal and knowing that there's so many other things that I have to do in my life and who can help me. And she was very understanding of that. So I'm just going to read a little bit about what I wrote as an intro. And then, of course, I'm going to have her share why she's here on Race Talks and allow her the opportunity to offer us more expert advice and tips. So she's a beacon tonight. She will steer us through the challenges that women face in securing tenure, achieving promotion, and establishing pay equity. With a leadership journey that spans from program coordinator to associate dean, Dr. Kimberly Adam Tufts, extensive experience provides invaluable insights into creating a space for women in the workforce. Tonight, we champion not only the success of individual women, but the collective empowerment that transcends into the betterment of families and communities. And so I'd like to say hello. And I don't know, should I be calling you Dr. Kat or would you prefer Dr. Kimberly Adam Tufts tonight?
Please call me Kat.
Okay.
That is truly my preference.
Well, okay.
But I thank you for asking. And you know, Dr. Kat has stuck. In the last position I held, I kept saying, please call me Kat. And everyone was saying, sure, Dr. Kat.
Sounds like me. No.
That's been, a little trial for me. No, actually, I think it's important that people call you whatever they're comfortable with. And I thank you, Kimberly, for inviting me to this table. I mean, I feel so excited. I've already learned some things from Emily. For example, I said, now I need to look and learn more about Margaret Thatcher. So now that's something I'm going to do, you know, but also just thinking about womanhood and being a woman. And I have learned in my work that no matter our cultural background or ethnicity, race, tribe, national place of origin, home of origin, as women, we have some very common experiences in the world. And so that's why I'm so excited to be here and why I've chosen, you know, people talk about a niche in business. So my niche is, you know, women in academia, but the big picture for me is women. So when I was at, and yes, I'm all just across the water, Emily, from William and Mary, just across the water, coming from coastal Virginia. No snow here. It's one of the reasons I came here.
Oh, you're lucky.
I know. I'm rubbing it in.
Yes.
But it's always good to see some snow. You know?
I was going to say, having a white Christmas is like, you know, you see that on TV.
You can see snow and experience it here and there. Like when we visit the great North, like when we go to Cleveland, which is, I was at a university in Cleveland before I came here. It was a very, very rich private university, one of the biggest endowments in the world. Wow. And quote unquote, the Harvard of the Midwest. So Vanderbilt calls himself the Harvard of the South. And I was at both of those schools. But I noted that women's experience there, here at a public metropolitan school in Virginia, as well as when I was in Zimbabwe at the University of Zimbabwe, women's experiences in academe were very similar.
Oh, wow.
There was some core stuff going on. And thank you for saying that, Emily. You know, I have a little issue out when people talk about, quote unquote, Africa. And I'll say, you know, there can 48 to 52 countries on any given day.
Exactly. So, some are falling, some are growing. Yes.
Right. Very distinct people, very distinct peoples in these nations. Right. But it was just that I saw, oh, my gosh, look at this. Look at women's experiences. And there are a lot of kind of myths that are still out there, I think, about women in academe. Because guess what? The majority of people who get doctoral degrees now are women.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, the majority of folks who hold full professor rank in a university are who?
Still men. Duh. Of course.
Oh, you know, and being able to move up in those ranks, getting tenure, becoming that, you know, that permanent type position, or moving in the ranks like I did from instructor. I went from instructor to full professor, and that's like four ranks. Or becoming an established scholar. Those are all really important to women who are working in higher education for them to be able to flourish and be respected in those environments. But one of the things that comes out, like if you're a woman, you're kind of seen a little differently, what your role is in this academic setting. I have a friend and a colleague who does a lot of her work. She was a chair of the Women's Studies Department, and she does a lot of her work in South Africa. And she used to talk about, you know, it's very interesting to me what I see in women in some African countries and how what happens in academe, what I see in women of color in the United States. She said, because if you're seen traditionally in a subservient role or a servant in a servant role, when you come to the academy, they call it, or academe, or they call it academia, you know, they have all this fancy language that we use. You're seen still as, oh, there goes Kimberly, there goes Emily, there goes a Kat. They can do that service work.
Oh.
And on top of everything else that you're required to do, be a good teacher, be a great scholar, now let's go out and serve everybody. But you're traditionally seen as that, so you should be able to handle it, girl.
Now, let me ask you what you exactly mean by serve.
Well, there's a lot of work that gets done in a university that has to be done. It kind of keeps the place alive because, you know, universities have what they call tripartite, I'm not sure I'm saying that correctly right now, mission, a threefold mission. Mm-hmm. And it's helping others to learn, it's generating new knowledge, and then there's a mission of service or providing things that good citizens do.
Oh, okay.
Like committee work, you know, making sure that we're equitable in the kinds of students that we bring in, committee work. Or let's help our, like I remember this one university I was at, the guy said, the president, he said, I want this university to become a part of the community rather than apart from the community. So a big thing is serving your local, you know, area.
Right.
And so women are seen as the folks that should be doing that, running the committees, doing the unpaid work.
Ah.
And things that, this is the interesting thing, Kimberly, things that they don't necessarily weigh heavily when you're seeing if you should move up in the university.
Okay.
If you should become from assistant professor to an associate professor or whatever, or that's not given a lot of weight. Mm. But these are all part of what universities are supposed to do to serve the world. And I was just looking back on a what do you call those things? A carousel I made back about a year ago on LinkedIn. And I was talking about myths. It was Women's History Month, I think, talking about myths in academia. Well, they always say, you know, most universities have a large social justice mission. That's why, you know, there's so much controversy about what's happening in Gaza and Israel in universities. So it's thought, well, women must have a great position in universities because universities are about social justice. Really? Well, okay.
Right.
Social justice for who?
Exactly. Well, when you were saying the what's weighed heavily, that's another thing that I was thinking about, because if you're doing work that's not weighed heavily, then you're not having the time to do the work that allows you to get better pay and to move up through the professorship. And so how might a woman or person of color, if that's different, change that dynamic? What might they say or do in order to progress further through the ranks? They don't want to come off as being sassy. I don't know what the right word would be. What are some of the ways in which they can, you know, serve their community and yet still maintain a position where they can move forward and have more equity in pay to other male leaders in the same profession?
Oh, what a great question, Kimberly. You know, it's such, when you think about it, it's now some of us women and men really do, you know, it kind of gets us going. Serving communities and doing things for others is feeds us. It's fulfilling, right?
Right.
So what we want to do in academia is we want to become intentional and strategic about that. So, you know, looking for service opportunities that are in aligned with maybe what you're required to do, your area of scholarship or research. Looking for, you know, saying, yes, okay,
that makes sense.
Let me think about this. And not saying no to everything, of course. We do need to do our fair share of service work, you know, but I, at the same time, I'm looking down at my desk and there's a book here that I kind of keep almost like a Bible right now. It came out last fall. It's The No Club, and no is in red. Everything else is in black. The No Club, putting a stop to women's dead end work. And this was written by four academic women. And they talk about, you know, how you said, Kimberly, you don't, you know, like you can be penalized. That's, and there was another word I had, but you said, you know, how do you say no or do the service work? Oh, gosh, we got kicked off.
No, we're still here.
Oh, I did. Okay, there I'm back.
I used the very the very real word sassy.
Right. You know, sassy. How do you do that without being seen as sassy or not being a quote unquote team player? Those kind of things. Well, you're strategic about looking for service work and teaching courses, because also women get the bulk of teaching courses a lot of times that are for beginning students or large groups of students, or that doesn't align with their expertise. And so what does that do? It drains you because you have to keep getting to be, you know, some weeks ahead of the students, learning before the students learn, right?
Right.
So what you do is you start to think, how can I do this in such a way that three things? It aligns with my profession or scholarship interests. It aligns with my values. It still is significant enough to be seen as being able to be ranked when they're looking at me for promotion. And also sometimes we may be at strategic about what kind of university you're at. Sometimes we choose the wrong kind of university. Like, this is university talk, but I'll say it like this: research intensive universities. Mm-hmm. Whereas we can go somewhere that might be more focused on teaching or service, community-based service, and that might fit better with who we are as a person, right? Okay. And you can, and in some of those places, teaching might be, and service may be ranked higher or the same as scholarship. See, money is involved, Kimberly. That's the other thing we haven't brought up. There's big money involved.
I was actually going to mention the money part, because just like even with entrepreneurship, as an entrepreneur, whatever your business is, you kind of want to do what you feel most comfortable doing. And that's not always what's going to move you forward or move your business forward. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line, and I know that Emily will agree, almost every entrepreneurial woman, if not man also, they look to see how can they get funding. You usually need to have money to make money. So how do I get that initial input, financial money down in order to build up then, I guess one could say, their equity. So what you were saying is concentrate on many things at once. If you have to have social, if you have to be of service in the niches that you own, that you know best, and that can forward you in other ways. So being at a wealthier research institution might be the way to go, as opposed to that really lovely liberal arts college that, you know, you love the city, you love the people, it's smaller, but you have to look at that. But I'm also thinking also what would make one happy, you know, or is happiness something that we should even look at when we're trying to look, when we're looking at finances? And Emily, I'm going to bring that question to you too, after Kat answers. See, I said Kat.
My answer is a resounding yes. And I think happiness is what I might say is true fulfillment and real satisfaction. So, and often that may not be a lineup with prestige or money. One of the first things I do with clients sometimes is I look, do some kind of assessment with them to get a sense of how these kind of scientific components of a great career are manifesting themselves in their lives. And one of the things is fulfillment and engagement. And so, yes, I say, absolutely, Kimberly, you have to. And when I say, I have this little framework that I came up with, be you, do you, promote you. And when you can do those things, and there it's be doing those things is in aligned with your values, your life purpose, your goals, your life circumstances, what you want, you know, for your family or for yourself, that's where you get that real happiness or engagement and fulfillment and satisfaction in a career. Absolutely, yes.
Thanks for answering that. And I'm going to then ask Emily too, because she's shaking her head up and down, and I want to give you an opportunity to share, but I want to come back to you, Kat. So I want you to start thinking in what you just said, is there a dynamic or a difference in maybe people of color, women of color, and white women who are still they're the majority in academia. And is there something that they know that maybe African-American women or Latino women or, you know, other women of color don't know? Asian women, for example, if you can highlight any of that dynamic or difference. And so Emily, and after Emily shares, because she was shaking her head up and down, so I wanted to hear from you. What are your thoughts and what Dr. Kat just said, or Kat just said?
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think that when it comes to sort of happiness in endeavors, I think it's really critical, particularly from an entrepreneurial perspective. When you look at data and failure rates for entrepreneurial enterprises within the first 5 years, many, many businesses will fail, right? And I think that happiness often translates into passion, right? If you're doing something that you are passionate about, you are more motivated, you are more happy doing it. And I think that this also ties back to your conversation about money and following the money. Entrepreneurship is often about following the money. But I think that when you are doing something just for money, people can tell, right? And are less likely to be involved and are less likely to be invested. And I think that when you're building a brand, if you have passion and joy and happiness in what you do, I think you're more likely to be successful in that endeavor. And this is a really big issue, right? Because, you know, in 2018, like 3% of venture capital funding went to businesses that were led by women. 3%, right? The odds are stacked against you. And so I don't think that doing something that you don't like and don't have joy in and sort of adding obstacles and hurdles for yourself is the right way to go about entrepreneurship journey.
Thank you for that. I was looking to see that we are coming down to our last time with segments, but I'm thinking I like the way our conversation is flowing. And since I'm the host and the programmer, I get to choose to stay on our topic because, like I asked with Kat to inform us if there's a dynamic and difference in ethnicity with, you know, how she can share any specific information that might help a certain group of women. I want to ask you the same thing, especially since you've had some personal knowledge with women from all different backgrounds in Africa and in Great Britain and in America, right? So you have a wealth of knowledge of different women, and not to share that this is stereotypical, but cultures are defined by being a little bit different than other cultures, right? So are there any differences in certain cultures that you or people of different ethnicities that they do that you can share with us that maybe we can all like steal a little bit of that from them to be better at what we do or what we want to esteem to do in our lives? So I'm going to have Kat answer the question that I posed before, and also you guys can say whatever you want to say. I mean, this is a round table, but I was just starting us off.
Well, thank you. That's a really deep question, Kimberly. And, you know, I first want to say what I'm saying is a generalization, and it may be an overgeneralization. It doesn't hold true for everyone. What I did find is that some of my colleagues, some of my white women colleagues had a bit of a different perspective, and they were able to help me to see some of them, not all, but some had the perspective of people coming from privilege or having privilege. And so they shared a few things with me and said, okay, now Kimberly, you know, I was asked to, for example, I think I had been at this new university 3 years, maybe. And I think I was on 13 search committees. And not just in my school, but in other colleges and in other schools in my college. And I was like, this is, you know, you can't get your work done if you're on a search committee. It goes on for many months, right? And the thing about it, though, they said, do you realize you're fulfilling two check marks? You're a woman, because search committees have to be, you know, diverse. You're a person of color, so they can check off two boxes with you. That's really great for the, you know, people who are getting the work done, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And what one woman told me, and she just retired, and I mean, she really was integral in my life. She said, Kat, Kimberly, the answer is easy. It's N-O. It's a two-letter word, she said, but she didn't just stop there. She said, when something is not aligning with your own passions, personal goals, blah, 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 you need to be able to say no, because you're going to be asked enough that you're going to be able to help and serve and do, as you know, do your fair share. So I thought that what the issue was for me is probably wanting a level of acceptance. So some of my white woman colleagues, they didn't have that kind of barrier to get over. Not some did, but some didn't, because they had a worldview where they had a sense of privilege. And, and you know, often it was thought about me that I must be first generation or something. And I came from a family of academics, right? I'm not first generation college. And many of my colleagues were, white colleagues were, but that was, you see? But I was always thinking, oh, I don't want them to think that I'm, you know, I'm not, I don't fit in, or I'm not acceptable, you know, or those kind of things. Even though my dad was a, he was big into, you know, civil rights and social justice. And I learned all those things. But I also, when a person is your role model and you see they're always fighting for social justice and they look like you, you might think, well, what does that mean about me? So you don't come to the table with the same, I don't know what we call it, you know,
fervor.
Yes. Or take me, you know, the same as, well, take me as I am as a whole, right? You're wondering, will they accept me? Oh my gosh, will they think I'm good enough? Will they know that I have these credentials? And it was often questioned. Interesting, women and people of color in academe often have to prove themselves to students when they go into a classroom. You have to establish your credibility over and over.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Over and over. But people like you provide guidance, and that's great. And I think we have enough time to hear. And again, I see you guys. I just want to let the listeners know that I'm seeing you, but unfortunately, because of the technology difficulty we had, you're not able to see me. So I see, I'm seeing Emily shaking her head yes, too. So Emily, share what you were thinking about, and then we'll do a sign off for the show.
Of course. I mean, I'll be quick. Dr. Kat, you made some amazing points. And I think what crops up a lot for me working in such sort of like international spaces is the idea of intersectionality, and sort of how our different identities and different cultures interplay and meet us at these sort of interesting crossroads. Because obviously I, as a white woman in England, have a very different experience than even like a white woman in South Africa or a white woman in Zimbabwe. A black woman in Nigeria is going to have a very different experience from a black woman in the US. And so I think it's really interesting and important to remember all of the parts of your identity when you're tackling these sorts of issues, and that you can't necessarily chop these pieces apart of like, I'm not just a woman, I'm a woman, and all of the other parts of me, when we're talking about how do I secure my seat at the table and how do I have conversations that are productive about tackling these problems.
Well, the insight that you provided me is wonderful, but that's why I asked for both of you to be on the show. So I'm going to sign off with saying that both Emily Bush and Dr. Kimberly Adam Tufts, or Kat as you now can call her, they have information in order to connect with them on the website Kimberly, www.kimberlyirwin.me. So it's very easy to know that. And you may also go to social media and look them up on LinkedIn and just type in their names, and you can find that out also on wgxc.org. And for my signing out, I'm just going to share that this was a fabulous November show. Even with all the technological difficulties, I want to thank the person who's helping me out here, Garrett Roche, who is the podcaster of the RocheSolidTruth.com. And he's going to bring us out with some musical interlude. As usual, I like to showcase some traditions of music for whatever Native Heritage Months we have. But this time I wanted to do something different, because last month we actually had a traditional song being played from like at a powwow. But we also know that people grow, and so their cultures grow and their music can change. So I looked at music from every different avenue, and this music is very recent. And if you actually want to know the name, I'm going to force you to go to www.kimberlyirwin.me so you can look up both of my guest material and the name of this artist.
Pleasure is all mine, Kimberly. Thank you.
And I'll just end with love, beauty, joy.
Thank you.
Oh,